Welcome to the ID Element. This is part of the Geneva Beta 2 week special, and today our guest is Jan Alexander. Jan is a senior program manager for the Federated Identity Team. Welcome, Jan.
Welcome.
Good to have you here today.
Thank you.
Jan, why don't you just give us a little bit of background on some of the interesting things you've worked on at Microsoft, or maybe before Microsoft,
sure.
How long you've been here. We'd love to hear that.
Okay, so I joined Microsoft late 2005, and before that I was working as a chief architect for the startup company doing web services and governance for SOA called Sysdnet. And I joined Microsoft, and the first thing I got to do is to take ownership of the WCF security feature. So I was the guy who helped ship the WCF in Windows Vista in .NET 3.0. And so we did pretty decent work there, and after we were done with WCF, the whole security team got moved to what we now call Federated Identity Team, where I'm still. And this is the team that does the Geneva wave of products. And my role here is a technical program manager. I oversee the design architecture for the products we are building here. And first I was pretty much involved with the framework part until the beta one shipped, which was in October 2008, and after that I moved into the Geneva server component, and I was like the instrumental driver around the token issuance language, which is probably what we are going to talk about today.
Yes. Yeah, well, very good, Jan. Geneva server beta 2 has just been released, and as you said, there's some significant work that's been done about or around the claims issuance language, and so that's what we really want to focus on today and drill into. So just from your perspective, what were some of the big drivers behind the claims issuance language? Why did we make such an investment there?
Yeah, it's a very good question. We spend a lot of time and a lot of resources doing that, so it's definitely, we feel it's important, and the reason we feel it is with claims we are doing something more than was there before, and the authentication is probably hard. You can do a lot of things with claims. You can express a lot of interesting data or information about entities that act in the distributed systems. But in order to, and you also learn that the component that makes those claims or data about entities available to the system is called security token service. That's how we call it. It's the guy who creates security tokens that contain claims. And the question now becomes, okay, so if I have such a powerful concept as a claim, I can express so much things, what is the process that actually makes those claims or those data available? Like, who issues them? How those things are made into existence in the system? How they are created? And this is exactly what the security token service is, and the backend of the security token service, which takes responsibility of gathering claims and making them available, is exactly place where this issuance language lives. So
okay.
We needed to make it really flexible, really powerful, in order to be able to leverage the power of claims. Because this is essentially the component that makes claims, creates claims.
Okay, great. So I would love to have you talk about some of the fundamentals of this claims issuance language and some of the components of it.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding is that we also support these various attribute stores now in
right.
Geneva Beta 2,
right.
which we did not support in the Beta 1 version. So can you talk some about those?
Right, absolutely. This is the attribute store is one of the aspects of what I talked about like previously. One of the aspects that is used to gather data about entities so that they can be made available to the other systems, other actors in the system, as claims. And so it's important to be able to query arbitrary data sources in the environment, because these kind of data that you want to express or project as claims can live everywhere. Can live in some software component somewhere. They can live in AD. They can live in some SQL database. They can be gathered from whatever you can imagine that has some information about the subject that's in the question. So the attribute store really is the core fundamental concept that allows us to query almost anything in the environment and get interesting data that we can then project as claims out.
Okay, and what attribute stores does the Beta 2 support?
Right, so we made some progress on that. As you probably know, Beta 1 only supported querying AD and ADLDS for attributes. So we extended that with the SQL. So now we can query AD, ADLDS, and the arbitrary SQL database with arbitrary schema. You essentially write a SQL query. Whatever that SQL query returns can be projected out as claims. And moreover, we not only added a SQL, but we also made that whole thing extensible. So you can actually plug your own implementations for attribute stores.
Okay.
So you can query your own systems, your own data stores, data sources that we don't know how to talk to. So we gave you, we made this thing public, and there is an interface that you have to implement. You have to write implementation in language of your choice and manage code, and provide this assembly to Geneva server, plug it in, and you should be able to query anything you want. That's essentially what this implementation provides you with.
Okay, great. That's a great extensibility feature there. So let's talk about the language itself. So can you give us just the basic concepts of how this language works? And you're certainly welcome to use the whiteboard. We'll try and capture everything on that as well.
Right, so basically, because the language or this backend of the STS that drives the issuance, that kind of makes the data available as claims or projects data as claims, is a component that's usually managed by IT Pro. It's not a developer-focused area, because that thing changes per deployment. It's kind of driven by the deployment, by the needs of the business, how to manage access to stores, to resources, to whatever lives in that environment. And therefore, we kind of felt the need for making this process that drives the issuance accessible to people that don't have developer backgrounds. And so we said, okay, well, but on the other hand, we need to make it really extensible, really flexible, so that I can do interesting things with it, because that's what the claims are about. It's the added value with Geneva. And so we said, okay, so we are going to borrow some aspects of the general purpose programming and going to shape them in a way so that they are domain specific for this particular use, and therefore more accessible, because we can make things simpler, look simpler, and use, and we can allow them to be used by people that are not really programmers. And so we created what's called domain-specific language, and the root of that language lies in the rule-based programming.
Okay.
So essentially, you can think about the process that creates claims as a set of rules that you write, and we execute those rules. And to make things even more simpler, we execute those rules in sequence.
Okay.
We don't jump from one rule to another like arbitrary or randomly. The way you write those rules in the order, that same order is used by the engine, by the STS, to kind of drive the issuance process.
Okay.
So the language is rule-based, and if we can drill a little bit deeper into what those rules are.
Okay.
All the rules, there are two kinds of rules, but every rule in that language has two parts. It is a condition part and it is an execution part. And the logic is fairly simple, like when the conditions are met, then the execution is triggered and it runs, it's evaluated. If the conditions are not met, then the rule is skipped and the execution proceeds to the next rule in the set, in the ordered set of rules.
Okay.
That's pretty much it. That's pretty much all you need to know, like,
okay,
from the high level, how that language works. And we can now talk about the individual operators or functions or statements you can use in those rules.
Can you just draw out an example of, say, a claim
mm-hmm.
that is incoming
mm-hmm.
and you want to transition that claim or you want to transform that claim into another claim that is going to go out from the STS?
What kind of example? Like some simple one? Or?
Yeah, let's start with a really simple one.
So you want to transform, I don't know, like, tell me what you want to transform.
Let's transform, say, a group claim manager, and we want to output a role permission of editor.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, that's it.
Should be simple. Should be fun. So first of all, what we need to do, like just a recollection for you guys, because you probably already saw that, is what the claim is. Because you need to know what the claim is. in order to be able to leverage it and make decisions or issue claims. And basically the claim is, so you gave an example, you have a group claim, manager, right?
Right.
That was the example. So in Geneva, the claim, which is a statement associated with some entity, contains from the policy perspective, from the issuance perspective, several interesting fields or members or aspects. One is name, which is the, or let's call it the same way the framework calls it. So this is type. In our case, as it's a group. So let's say in the incoming claim for group member, the type will be group. And I'm making this simpler. Those things are like type are usually represented as URIs.
Okay.
This will be fairly long, but I don't want to spend time writing.
Right.
So let's say the incoming claim type is a group, which tells us something about the value, tells us the semantic meaning of that value, right?
Right.
And then we need to convey the value, obviously claim as a value. The value here, let's say, is the managers, which means that the entity that possesses this claim is a manager. That's what the group says. There are some other aspects, like other interesting property that we can talk about, this issuer. Who made that claim available to you? Like, who says this?
Right.
And that's important from the trust point of view. Like, do I trust this? Anybody can say I'm a manager, but
right.
The question is whether the authority that says that is trusted.
Right.
To say that, like, when that claim is actually being used or evaluated. So let's say, classic example, like if you are this identity provider STS and this is derived from your Kerberos ticket, the issuer for this will be local authority. Right. This means that it has been provided by your trusted computing base in the machine, which is in this case is LSA process running in Windows that made the authentication happen and gave you the data. And then there are some other properties, we can skip it for now, but let's say we start with those three. And if I want to transform this into the claim called role, so the type of the claim will be role, and the value we set editors, right?
Right.
So how that statement will look like, as I said, we developed a DSL for the issuance, so it's a language, it's a syntax. So let's show you on this example what the syntax look like. And I only really what I need here is a single rule. I don't need more than one. And so as I said, the rule is a condition and it is an execution part. For that condition, I need to know whether there is a rule, whether there is a claim with the type group and the value managers. So I write a syntax. For that part is called claim selector. It selects claims, and we are not really using the selection feature right now, but we will probably later when I show some other aspect of it. But so it starts with a square bracket, and then I put some constraints about what I want to select.
Okay.
And I say type, and everything operates on claims. So I don't need to say claim.type.
Okay.
For example, I just say type because there is nothing else than claims in this language. So I say type equals group, and I need to do this. Okay, so that selects all the groups. I don't want all the groups. I just want this particular group, the manager. So I can extend that constraint with another constraint and say value equals managers. Okay? This selects all the claims that look like this. Let's say there is one. It might be more, and that's where it gets interesting. But let's say there is a one. Then I write the execution part of that rule. So the condition and the execution parts are separated by this special character, the implied implication character. And we have pretty much two kind of execution statements in the language. And I wrote one, which is called issue. It's pretty obvious what it does, right? It
right.
makes claims.
Right.
It creates claim, one or more. And I can say, okay, so I want to issue a claim, but and say type equals role and value equals editor. Okay? This will be sent.
Yep.
And then I terminate the rule with a semicolon. That's it.
Well, that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. We hope, at least. It's computer syntax, obviously, but...
Yeah. And then you can have multiple rules also in the list, and it will just work its way down through the rules.
Absolutely correct.
As it goes. Okay. Yeah. And there's an evaluation context and an output context as well.
do you want to
go there?
Now we are getting dirty, right?
Yeah.
So we can extend this sample. Let's say we want to do more than just this. We would like to do, if I'm manager, I'm editor, and then let's say I want yet another thing to be like accounted for.
Okay.
All editors can read file foo.txt.
Okay.
So, and I want to encode it in the policy. And actually the consumers of claims, they are not really interested in roles. I just use roles, let's say I use the roles only for managing access, for like methodology to author or manage policies, right?
Okay.
So I use this something like RBAC model for assigning people and groups to roles and roles to permissions. That's the classic approach, right?
Okay.
And really what I'm only interested in on the issuance side is the permissions.
Okay.
I don't care about roles. You just use it internally because that's how you manage people and manage access to resources. But what the running party or the resource manager is concerned about is, does this user have access to this file or not? So that's ultimately what I would like to issue. Right? So there is a middle step. So I use roles because that helps me manage things. But my resource managers, my applications, are not really interested in roles. They don't understand roles. They understand permissions. Right? So let's extend this example to account for that. So instead of issuing this, I will issue permissions.
Okay.
But I want to keep using roles. So, and that's where things get interesting, because now I need to use multiple roles. And the rules will actually depend on each other in a certain way. So let's start with the same thing. So there is a group managers. If I'm in managers, I am editor.
Right.
But I don't want to make this available in the token. I don't want anybody to see this outside the policy execution. Right? Only STS sees that. So I change this issue. That now we are getting to this other verb, which is called add. And it's pretty much the same thing, except it's a little bit different in terms of how the engine operates. And now we need to understand details of the execution model. And as you correctly said, you did your homework, and you know there are some execution evaluation context and output context and something with this, right?
Right.
So the way it works, we essentially recognize three collections of claims.
You can use the other board there, Jan.
Are you seeing?
Yeah, I can. I think I can get that.
Oh. So we have input, which is pretty much the set of claims we get when you start, when you run.
Right.
So when you start the policy, you give it the set of claims you know about the subject that you want to transform.
So input.
So let's say here we have the manager, group managers, right? So I'm going to use some. Little bit easier way to capture it. So group managers. Then we have execution or evaluation context. And the last one is output. And again, the semantic of the output is fairly simple, right? It contains all the claims that I want to put into the token. This is the end result. Thing that's returned from the policy once the policy execution is done. What essentially means that all the rules in the policy are executed.
Okay.
And once there are no more rules, it's done, and this is the output. So now what this is, right, the execution context. And this is where all the interesting things happen. This is where the claims are added. And the way it works is when the policy engine starts, like on the first step, it copies over the input to the execution. Everything that's in the input becomes execution.
Okay.
It's like the working set of the claims. So let's say, so I execute the first step and make the group managers here. Okay. It's still not here. So
okay.
if the policy was empty, this will happen and then it will be done. So output will be empty.
Okay, so the server automatically does that.
Copies this. But it doesn't mean much. It
right.
doesn't mean anything from the output perspective.
Right.
And then what happens is those two verbs, we already see an issue, and here's the other one, which is add. modify execution context, some of them modify the issue, modifies the output context as well.
Okay.
So let's say what happens if I have this group membership, managers, and I have this rule.
Yes.
Right, in the policy.
Yes.
What happens is, so this rule is triggered. This condition constraint is evaluated on all the claims that are in the execution context. Just looks at the execution context, nowhere else. So all the selectors only look into this middle thing. And okay, so it says, oh, there is a single claim, this says type group, this says type group, this value manager, this says value manager, so okay, I get it, I have one, at least one, right?
Right.
So I can run this.
Correct.
And so what add does, it adds claim, new claim, but just to the execution context.
Okay.
It doesn't modify the output context. And that's the important difference, so the rule, the role, so let's say it happens and I end up with a role, editor here, right? So there's a first claim, second claim, after this rule is done. If this was the only rule in the policy, again, it will terminate, output will be empty, nothing gets issued. The token, issue token is completely empty in terms of claims. We don't want that, but we said we want to add permission, right?
Correct.
And so we have a role, the role is not really here, which is what we wanted.
Right.
We said nobody's going to see the roles. But there's this permission missing. So how can I do it? I can create another rule.
Okay.
I just add another rule. The important part is the sequence. You need to remember that they are run in sequence, as the regular programs are run in sequence. So if you want to depend on the result of this rule, you need to add your rule after the rule. You cannot add it before, or put it before it. So let's say I do the same trick here. Not using really anything else. I just say type, and I'm asking for role. Now, and I say value editor. And if something like this is there, I'm going to issue. And we said all the editors have access, read access to the full .txt file. So I can add. And now it's interesting. Well, not add, but I need to issue, because this is actually what's going into the token.
Right.
That's the difference.
Issue goes to the token.
Right. Right. We will see it. Once I do this, I will show you how it modifies
okay.
the context. And I say issue, and we say permission. Okay, so let's say I define a special claim type for this. It's called permission. You can do that. That's the interesting part of, like, interesting power in claims. You can actually do whatever, right? Its type is just a URI. You can define your own types. This is something that we didn't have before, for example. Like, sometimes we had roles, like ACMAN has roles, for example, let's say AD has groups, right? But
right.
we didn't have a system that allowed you to define custom things, custom attributes about your users. This is exactly what I'm doing here, just
right.
define new claim type. Right? I don't have to do anything, I just use the type and I'm done. Obviously the reliant party, the application that consumes this, has to understand what it means.
Correct.
So there has to be some agreement. But it's super simple to introduce new claims, new claim types, types of values, and let's say I define a special, it's my claim, so I can define the format of the value, right? So let's say, in this case, what I will do is, let's say value, and let's say read colon foo txt. So this is my format for encoding permissions. So first part is permissions, then there is a colon, then there is the name of the resource, right? Let's say, this, again, it's just arbitrary. So I can do anything, as long as it is string, as it is representable as a string, right? I could do base64, but that would be really hard to write. But it's string. You need to understand this whole language operates on strings. So types are strings, values are strings, they are compared to strings. So that's kind of where we are right now, and we are looking into extending that, making it even more powerful in terms of structured values. But right now it's strings. And that's it. So what happens if this rule runs is, because I use issue here, okay, first of all, there is a condition, right? I need to match role with the value editor. It's there, okay, fine, I can run. So I run issue. Issue, unlike add, adds claim to both execution context and output context. I need to add it to execution so that other rules can use it.
Okay.
And I need to add it to output so that it's captured once the policy is done. So once this runs, suddenly a new claim is added, starts to exist, which is called permission, and it has the value of 3. Let's just put this there. But it's apparent that the values are like. And the same thing happens here. So I will have permission. And then I will have read. And let's say this is all, this is the whole thing I have in the policy. So now it stops, this will become the content of the token. So the interesting thing you just saw is what's in the logical language is called inference. Right? Because this didn't exist at the beginning. It was added by a rule. But you also saw that this can be used by another rule in the same program to actually derive yet another knowledge. And this deriving of knowledge and reusing of the knowledge in the subsequent rules is what's usually called inference. What differs is the triggering mechanism of the rules here. Some languages actually do that. They actually look back as well and try to execute rules that they already run. And we were thinking about it, but eventually we said, okay, so for this particular use case, we are going to stick with the sequential model because it's much simpler for people to understand. You don't have recursion. Recursion is usually something that causes headaches, especially to people that are not really coming from the developer background. So.
Well, that's excellent. That's an excellent view. There's also aggregate functions, and how might those be used?
Right. So, there is one part here that I skipped. I assume that there is always one instance of the thing that I'm matching here. So this thing runs only once.
Okay.
This is what we use today. Let's say I change this a little bit. I'm going to erase it now. So we have it captured yours, so it's not going to keep it anymore. And let's say, usually you don't have one group. You have more groups than that, right?
Right.
Let's say I have a group called managers, and then I have another group called users. I'm a user. Or the subject in the question is user. And then I can have, let's say, another group, right? But it's okay to have just two for now. And let's say I write a selector that looks like this. Type equals group. And what I would like to do is modify all the groups and prepend them in something. So let's say, because I know this user is coming from Microsoft, so let's say I want to say, instead of using the value of the groups as it came, I want to write it as a Microsoft _ and the original name. And I want to do that for all the groups. So now we are like, usually what you will do in the procedural languages, you will write some for each loop or something. And that's not what's going to happen here, and that's one of the beauty of the language we have here, is that it actually automatically expands if it hits more than one claim. That's why those things are called selectors. Okay. They select, really. And they kind of select everything that matches. Right? So let's say I want to write an issue statement that adds this prefix, but how am I supposed to do that? Right? So I have multiple groups now. I cannot just hard code the value there because I don't know what the value is.
Right.
It can be any value. So how I do that? And so there is another feature in that language that allows me to name the matched claim so that I can use it later in that execution part. And the syntax looks like this. So there's an arbitrary string, which is a name. Think about this as a variable name, in this case it's C. And there is a colon, it's a special character. And it's prepended before the selector, the actual selector. And what this says, name all the things that meet this criteria as C. And you need to understand that this part runs multiple times. As many claims that meet this criteria are there,
okay,
that many times this other part, the right-hand side, will run. So let's say I do issue. So now it's kind of becoming simple, right? So how I do this is issue, I say, okay, so I'm going to stick with the group now. So I'm writing group. And I write value. And now it's interesting. I need expression. I need to be able to concatenate things, and language has expressions pretty much because it's string-based. The things that we have as expressions are string expressions, like we can do regular expression matches, we can do regular expression replacements, substitutions. We can, the most simple one is concatenation, so let's look at how that looks. So I said I want a special prefix, so I just write a prefix. So let's say Microsoft underscore, that's what I said. And then I need to add the original value, that value of this guy, right?
Correct.
Whatever match it is. I do that like plus C dot value, right?
Great.
And that's it. So this is how I, so this C is this C, right?
Correct.
Anything that matches this is named as C. This runs for all the things that were matched here, and the C is substituted by the actual claim. And the claim has a value, right? It's right here.
Right.
So I just access the value on it, and get the value and concatenate it with the fixed literal string Microsoft underscore, and I'm done. So this is how you combine things, like how you transform values, for example. You can transform anything. You can transform types like this, you can transform value types, you can transform issuers. It's up to you.
Very, very, very neat. Very powerful.
And then you ask about these aggregates, right?
Yes.
So you just explain that this execution part runs as many times as there are claims that are meeting the criteria and the selection, the condition. But what happens if I want to run this only once, regardless of how many of those guys are there? There's a use case for that as well. I need to know that this guy is coming from Microsoft, and then I'm going to say from Microsoft. It doesn't matter how many groups he has from Microsoft. So let's try to do this. And because in this case, it will run multiple times, so we'll get multiple from Microsoft claims, depending on how many things I'm matching against. So let's say I want to write something like, if there is a claim, there's an issuer, that says Microsoft. Right. I want to say, okay, give me a claim that says he's coming from Microsoft. But I don't know how many of those there are.
Right.
I mean many. I don't want many from Microsoft claims. I want just one. And that's where the aggregates come in. And this is like the same thing as in SQL. You have counts, you have averages. But you need to understand we only operate on strings here, so we don't have averages, but we have count and we have exist. So two aggregates we have, and I'm going to use the other one, which is exist. So I say, to learn right, exists. I do this. So I kind of put it in the function.
Okay.
It looks like function, it's aggregate function. It takes all the, so it pretty much runs simple, right? So this selection runs, it returns things as they are met. This thing, this exist function, terminates immediately after at least one is found. So
okay.
It's actually pretty quick. You don't have to go through all the claims you have. It's just it's sufficient to find the first one.
Correct.
And this evaluates as true. And because it evaluates to a single value, right, it's a projection from multiple values to a single value, then this right hand side runs only once. So that's the trick, right? And now I say issue type. Let's say, I don't know, let's say origin, right? Something like that. Like,
right.
Again, I invented my own claim type. And the value will be Microsoft. Right? So the semantic thing of it is, if I have at least one claim that was issued by Microsoft, I assume I'm coming from Microsoft. So that's what's going to be added into output and evaluation context. So this is aggregates here.
Very, very neat. Very neat. Well, that is a great primer on the language here. So with Geneva Server, there are some resources then available. This will be in the help file.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We have documentation. There are many things we haven't covered, like you can match multiple things with the conditions. You can say, if you are in a group of managers and you authenticated with smart card, then you are giving like a role as, I don't know, a strong editor or like a high value, high business impact system access or something like that. So you can combine things together in the conditional part in order to get to execution part. And that's another powerful feature we didn't have before. So, and the other thing I haven't shown is really how you use attribute stores. But it's simple. It's the same thing, it's just the issue end statement or add statement looks a little bit different. You use syntax for that attribute store to query it. and the outcome of that becomes the value of the claim you issue.
Okay, very good. Now, does this mean that in Geneva Server that every single claim that I have to deal with, I have to write a rule for it, or does the server manage that through UI as well?
Right, absolutely. So that's very, very good point. Obviously, this is powerful. This is really nice. And if you are into like editing text files and writing programs, or it's easier than writing program, but still requires knowing the syntax and not making syntactic errors and knowing what you are doing, then this is perfect, valid tool. So we give you access directly to this. You can write things in the syntax and use PowerShell or even the UI to enter those. But obviously there are other sort of people that just like want to add something common, something that most people do, and they don't want to learn the language at all. And for those, we actually have a UI as well as part of the Geneva Server Management Console. And so you can alter a limited set of, a subset of those rules that I just shown as via the UI, nice forms where you just click and select things in the combo boxes, and you will be done in like 10 seconds with the rule.
Okay. And then the UI also has the capability to look at the rule once it's created it?
Correct.
Okay. Correct. So you can also learn from that.
Absolutely.
As well.
Other person can. Like, you write a rule, somebody else can look at them. Yes.
Right.
And it's quite, that's the other reason we did that instead of forcing you to write C# program, for example. Because this, we store it as a text. We don't compile it, really. So it's pretty transparent what this does. You don't need to reverse engineer anything. You write the rules and you can look at them in the source form, in the UI form, and look at what they actually do. You don't have to understand programming and deassemble some assemblies. Analysis becomes really interesting.
Yeah, well, very, very, very good, Jan. I thank you very much for taking the time to introduce us to the new claims issuance language.
You're very welcome.